and welcome to the second hour of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
So let's see. Today's November 30th, 2025, just for reference. And you can always find archives that are free to listen to and have no interruptions at wethepeopleradio.us. Information about sponsorships there, too. We thank all the people who chip in on a annual, monthly, weekly, different times. We appreciate your help along the way. Every little bit counts. And that is all for announcements, huh? Got anything?
No, I think you did good.
Thanks, Phil.
Yeah.
Are you going to make me dinner tonight?
Yeah, I doubt it.
I know. Bill's been experiencing the magic of shingles. We should do a small commercial. Everyone should run out and get your vaccine. Not big on vaccines, but after watching the shingles episode, I think I'm going to double down there and join the shingles vaccine crew, because it's heinous.
It's been,
you've had the pox for 2 weeks, huh?
Yeah, been 2 weeks.
Ugh.
Yeah, it's fun.
Yeah, everybody says it's bad. It's bad.
Yeah.
So, I guess pox is a good word to use because our guest, Jared Naught, is a historian, so he can tell us all about pox.
The pox.
He's called the pox.
Bring out your dead.
Here we go. Tiny Blunders, Big Disasters is his book. He has two different books, actually. Same title, but the book two. The Many Tiny Mistakes That Changed the World Forever is the one that has just come out, and I thought it was fascinating. He's got all sorts of articles. No pressure, Bill. I didn't tell you about this part. But he's published in the Mensa Bulletin.
Oh.
So probably not a good day to catch you with the Mensa Bulletin. He's had the pox for 2 weeks. Here you go. We got the Mensa guy on. Yeah, that's hard. You, let's see. There was, he's a father of five. I'm the oldest of five. Huh? Live in Atlanta. We've been to Atlanta. After we got married, we went to Atlanta. So, you know, we got a little crossover there, except for the whole Mensa thing.
So much in common.
So much in common. But the thing that caught me on your publicist's email, of course, was Mondami says he still believes Trump is a fascist after a cordial White House meeting. And you had some commentary on that based on a historian's point of view, and I thought, what a great timing on this whole thing. Besides the fact that, I don't know, honestly, history, it's got to be hard for all of you who are historians to just watch the world. It's like, good grief, doesn't anyone read anymore? History is just continuing to repeat in rapid fashion. Jared, I don't know where you want to start today, but I do want to compliment you on the music for the trailer of Tiny Blunders, Big Disasters. The music is fantastic, actually.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Yeah, who's in charge of the music for that?
My daughter, one of my daughters, Elizabeth Ann. My last name is Naught, of course, and I have twin daughters that we had late in life. And they double knots, okay, of course. So, I guess if my last name were Peak, I guess they'd be the Twin Peaks. But now she put it all together, and also she put the portrait gallery together, which is kind of interesting. Here's like 27 different pictures.
Yeah.
And you hover the cursor over it, and the headline leaps up, summarizing the key headline for that particular personality. I talked about him for Eisenhower. It says, behind the famous grin, there was a man known for his explosive temper, and he was very unforgiving of subordinates who let him down.
Oh, God.
So he could be tough to work for, which is, I'm sure, the way he wanted it. So.
Yeah, I'm sure. Well, I just thought, what? I read through quite a bit of it, and I went through both of the books, and I thought, well, why don't we know any of these things? This is all, I don't know, just makes history more accessible, I guess.
Yes, of course, in history class, they tend to emphasize the big events, and also they tend to be very positive, especially when it comes to events of the United States. If it's something that was embarrassing or kind of negative, it gets very, very little exposure, if it's something kind of glorious and triumphant, so on and so forth, it gets a little bit more emphasis. But the book, Tiny Bunner's Big Disasters 1 and 2, kind of goes behind the scenes. It looks like the little small mistakes that sometimes had huge, huge impact on the final outcome. So it's kind of turning history sideways, looking at it from a different perspective. And it kind of some details are kind of dirty and kind of embarrassing, and some of them very glorious. So it's kind of a different view of the overall historical record.
How do you, I mean, just out of curiosity, you must have, I don't know, did you stumble across a couple of these and thought, you know, I should write a book?
Well, it's funny. No, it's been, 12 years ago since I first had the idea. The very first idea was having to do, here's the teaser for it. I said a single piece of tape rotated several inches the wrong direction changed the outcome of the Vietnam War. The United States might very well have won except for this single tiny mistake, which doesn't make any sense whatsoever. What we're talking about, pieces of tape, it has to do with the Watergate break-in. They were told when they jimmied the door from the parking garage into the office building, they were told to hold the striker on the door down with a piece of tape in the vertical position so that the night watchman couldn't see it from the hallway. They made a mistake and they put it in the horizontal position. So when Frank Wills, that was his name, came walking down the highway, the hallway about 2 o'clock in the morning, he sees the this tape on the door. Oh, the door's been jimmied. He calls the Washington D.C. police. I think he had to call them twice. And so they and there's a strong rumor that the uniformed officer on duty that part of the city was intoxicated at a local bar and could not answer the call. So they had to send the bum patrol in this place. That's three officers dressed as hobos in a glossy car. They pull up you see this actually in the old movie, All the President's Men. They pull up into the water gate. They are not recognized as policemen by the lookout. They come in and arrest James McCord and the Cuban operatives. Watergate begins. Boom, 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 boom. Okay, and then Henry Kissinger gave an interview on radio and television. He was, they just signed the treaty with the North Vietnamese. They knew the North Vietnamese were going to be testing the treaty, violating the treaty, so the plan was to go in there and bomb the living daylights out of them again to get them back in compliance, but they were so weak politically they couldn't. South Vietnam collapses, Nixon administration collapses, it all falls apart because of a single piece of tape rotated several inches the wrong direction and a drunk cop.
Yeah.
I read that and I was like, okay, I mean, where's that been all this time? Where do you find all these things?
Well, I tell people that I may forget where I put my keys, but my brain is a trash bin of trivia. Okay, so all this stuff, it's not been of much use until I started writing the book. Okay, but so, and I go back. Plus, you do a lot of awful research online. There's just a huge amount of information available, and it's just amazing, the treasure trove of mistakes that you find in history. It made a huge difference. Let me give you one from book two. It's one of my favorites, and it's you can go to tinyblundersbigdisasters.com, and we have, among other things, there. It's kind of a fun place to visit with the portrait gallery and so on and so forth. It also has three Instagram reels, and here's the kind of teaser from my favorite reel. It's I call it the John Wayne reel. It said, what outrageous character bought stolen horses from the Comanche Indians using counterfeit money? What could possibly go wrong? When the Comanche came back for revenge, it set off a chain of events that had a major impact on the history of the Southwest. John Wayne later played this very colorful character in a John Ford movie with the help of Natalie Wood. That's a fascinating story.
Wow. I think that's just really fun. And so have you, I actually didn't look, I should have. Have you written other books outside of this?
No, I have a third book that I was working on. It was called The Hushed Up Murders of Famous People. They murdered big and got away with it, but my wife told me if I started one more book, she's going to leave me. she needs a lot of attention. It's okay, honey. Okay, whatever. So I'll just put that on hold. But sometime in the future, I will hopefully get it done, you know.
Well, we had Michael Pack on, the guy who did made the film of the last 600 yards in the first hour, and I thought it was worth thanking you for your service, because I saw in your bio that you're a decorated combat infantry officer in Vietnam and the 1st Air Cavalry Division, so we
thank you.
Yep, our hats off to you. And then in real life, you, you weren't writing books about the trash in your brain. it says here you were the vice president of sales and marketing and the marketing director in the home improvement industry.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yes, I've been retired now for about 2.5 years. And when I first started the book about 11, 12 years ago, I had 5 children still at home. I had working full time, and I had a wife who needed attention. Well, since then, the 5 children have moved on. I have since retired, but I still have a wife who needs attention, which is an important priority, as we all know. But I have fun writing the books, but I have fun being married too. So we'll arrange our priorities accordingly.
Well, and who put together the website?
Well, that was my daughter again.
Is that the same daughter?
The same daughter, and also with a lot of help from the other twin daughter, Mary Catherine. They were both great to help on sort of the technical side of things.
I did. Kudos to them. I really liked it. I thought it was really, it was well done, and it was really beautiful. Actually, I thought that the map of the world behind it, and just the way they did it, and the quiz, and I don't know. It was one of those websites you kind of fall in, and all of a sudden you realize now you're late for some other stuff, and you've roped us into your madness.
Yes, it's kind of like a literary carnival to visit the website. We call we have the 3 Instagram reels, we have a trailer, we have the fun quiz, the portrait gallery, so on and so forth. And so you can spend 15, 20 minutes there. They have 2 free chapters. And then we're going to add another chapter to it. I think chapters, the first 2.5 pages of Wrong Way Corrigan, which is a fun chapter. It's a real hoot. That's the chapter that Mensa is going to be publishing in their January edition. And it's for the headline, it's going to be up there backwards, Wrong Way Corrigan. It's almost spoiler for a bit of a fun, interesting story. Kind of a comic relief kind of a story. Plus, we got another favorite chapter. A lot of people is the Bismarck chapter. If you're up in history buff, you'll love that one. There's a series of mistakes, both on the part of the British and on the part of the Germans. Back and forth, it's a question of whose mistakes are going to finally win out in the end. And it turned out to be that the British won. But it was funny at one part of the battle, running battle back and forth. These old biplanes take off from the Ark Royal aircraft carrier. It's in a storm, and they're told that there's no other British ships in the area, which is not true. The Sheffield was in the area, and so in the storm they get confused, and they come in and drop their torpedoes against a British ship, the Sheffield. Fortunately, it was a new kind of magnetic torpedoes, and they malfunction. But they could have just sunk one of their own ships out of confusion. So they come back, they load up with the old-fashioned contact torpedoes, take off again. This time they find the Bismarck. They come in, they hit the Bismarck, and one of the torpedoes hits the rudder. Now the Bismarck can only travel in a very big circle, and they're able to come in and to sink it. But there had been, except for those mistakes right there, there's also another mistake. A German submarine had the Ark Royal in its sights, but if they had used up all their torpedoes, if they had saved the back 2 or 3 torpedoes, even 1 good torpedo, they could have sunk it. That would have changed the outcome also. You just kept, here's one mistake, here's another mistake. The captain of the Bismarck broke radio silence, a big mistake. He was being warned not to. The British had lost it. They don't know where you are. Oh, what do you know? You know, it's stuck out. They kept sending these long messages, breaking radio silence, and sure enough, the British pick him up, and they can start triangulating his position, but they make a mathematical mistake. They think he's heading to the north instead of the south. It took us 7 hours to discover. Oops, we had a mathematical mistake. Oh, sorry, go back. So here's this one mistake. Here's another mistake. Here's this one mistake. Here's another mistake. About 10, 12 mistakes, they finally determined the outcome with, the British winning in the end.
by no fault of their own.
They fall into this great big victory. And it was a huge, very, very important, because Great Britain is very, very dependent on the caravans of the convoys coming from the United States. They don't have enough arable land to even feed themselves. And so without the convoys, they're in big, big trouble. And, of course, the Germans knew this, and the idea was to have a surface ship go out there and start sinking convoys right and left, in addition to the submarines, and that's why it was so important to sink the Bismarck.
Wow. Wow. I bet as you were finding these and putting, I'm curious, we have to take a quick break. When we come back, I'd like to know how you decided what order you would put all these things in. I'm always curious what goes on in the background of how these things get put together. Mm-hmm. Our guest is Jared Knott. He's a historian and an author. The books are Tiny Blunders, Big Disasters, and I think we know him well enough to know that we have like the perfect song for him that probably plays in the trash of your mind.
The trash can.
Yes, the trash can of your mind, I believe, has a musical background. And we'll be right back. You're listening to We the People. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Welcome to my world. Won't you come on in? Miracles, I guess, still happen now and then.
I'm studying nuclear science. I love my classes. I got a crazy teacher. He wears dark glasses. Things are going great, and they're only getting better. I'm doing all right, getting good grades. The future's so bright. I gotta wear shades.
Okay, so welcome back to the world of Jared Knott. Jared, I'm super curious. How did you decide what order to put these in?
Yes, I chose my favorite chapters there in the beginning. The very first one was about the Rosenbergs, which was it was a shorter chapter, but it really epitomized how a tiny mistake can make such a big difference. The Russians, sending their codes using this pad, the code pad, is supposed to use one-time use. One of the clerks there in the war took a shortcut and used it twice. That allowed the Americans to break the code. That allowed them to gather information that led to discovering that Rosenbergs were agents and that Rosenbergs were stealing the atomic bomb secret. And it led to them being put to death in the gas chamber. The electric chair. So that was just a short chapter, but here's this one little mistake, and boom, all these horrible things that came from it. And then the second one, chapter is the Bismarck, which is one of my favorite chapters. Now, by the way, let me back up. The introduction, which begins with literally with a bang, it begins with a volcano. That's one of my favorite chapters also. So there's a lot of fun chapters there, and by the way, switching over to a different subject is that the and then also to follow through on that thought, that I would put down the chapters had to do with navigation in one category, and one had to do with politics in another category, and also one had to do with medicine. But that was a kind of a fun section there, the mistakes that were made in the medical field with Professor Fleming discovering penicillin. That was a very fun chapter. But also talking about music, Johnny Horton hit Sink the Bismarck for the early 1960s. It's kind of a fun song to listen to. It kind of tells the story of the Bismarck and put the lyrics.
I saw the other one here, The End of the Roman Empire.
Yeah.
Does it ruin it if you tell us the story?
No, not at all. In fact, that's one of the Instagram reels. And Elon Musk sent out a playful tweet. The teaser there is that the last vestige of the Roman Empire that was right there at this gigantic fortress, very successful fortress, it stood over 1,000 years. It had been under 26 major assaults have always been successful. But it fell in large part because somebody forgot to close and lock a gate in the fortress wall.
It's
not an overstatement to say the Roman Empire fell because somebody forgot to close and lock the gate. So Elon Musk sends out this little playful tweet, and it shows a soldier in bed, cartoon, with a helmet on, his blanket pulled up to him, to his chin, and a balloon shows his thoughts, and it says, he's saying, "Did I remember to lock that gate yesterday?" And the answer, of course, is no. And
no.
The Turks were a little bit offended by it, because that was Ottoman Empire, so on and so forth. But anyway, that was what happened. And in fact, there's three different stories in the book about how not closing and locking the main gate to a fortress led to the collapse and defeat of that fortress. Major Beasley was his name, was drunk and or hungover, and kept getting warned that the Red Stick Warriors were coming, and he would identify that one slave had warned him, and he had him tied to the post, getting ready to whip him to death, and then here comes the attack. Oh, here's a wide open gate, and so on and so forth. So he must have felt, and then he's running to close the gate, and he gets shot and killed. So he must have felt very badly the last minute of his life. He had to die feeling stupid, and there's no way no worse way to die than that.
You gotta hate when that happens.
Yes, I hate when that happens. Right. And there was that, but that kind of thing. And then there's also Fort Parker, and on like that. So there's a lot of fun events, one after the other, in the book.
Wow. Are these things that you were interested in this for a long time, or did you just stumble across a couple of them, and then once you started looking, they just came out like a floodgate?
Yeah, I was interested in history since I was a teenager, but the very first one I happened to think of was the Watergate, the one I mentioned, and then maybe I'd make a good magazine article. I thought of another one going through my trash pen of a brain. That's 10 or 12. I got enough to write a magazine article. Okay, I kept digging. Here's another one. And when you dig, it's just amazing how many screw-ups and mistakes and blunders there are throughout history. They have such a huge impact on the final outcome. And, of course, it's parallels the butterfly effect. There was a famous mathematician back in the 1950s. Lorenz was his name, and he was Professor Lorenz, and he was back then it took a long time for the computers to run all these computer programs making a projection of the weather, and he had this one number. It was a number with a decimal and 18 little small numbers behind it. See, it's taken so long for the computer to run these numbers, I'm going to whack off the last six of them, just have a decimal with 12 numbers behind it, they'll speed things up. He was amazed at how the outcome was so different when those six numbers were chopped off. And so it led him to conclude that a butterfly flapping its wings in Brazil would set off a chain reaction that a year and a half later could lead to a cyclone in Texas. And that was the birth of the whole concept of the butterfly effect. And so it's a little bit analogous. You're leaving Seattle, Washington, and you're trying to get to London, and your compass is off by 1 or 2 degrees, you end up down in North Africa instead of London, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So anyway, that's where the concept comes from, and this is a butterfly effect as it applies to history, and there's mistake after mistake over and over again. But now sometimes the mistakes have beneficial results. One example was Alexander Fleming, back in St. Mary's Hospital in 1928, and he was known for being something of a slob. And my wife tells me I could relate. anyway, so it kind of kept him a brilliant man, but kept a real messy lab. And he was getting ready to go to up to Scotland for 2 weeks on vacation. He has all these dishes, these petri dishes that have bacteria smeared in them. He just leaves them out there on his countertop, doesn't clean them up. I'll clean them up when I get back. Very key, leaves the window to the lab open, okay, and off he goes to Scotland. Well, somehow, a penicillin spore, comes in through the window, blows around, and lands in one of the petri dishes. One of the biggest turning points in history. He comes back from vacation, okay, to his credit, he's looking through the petri dishes. What's this? This mold has landed right in the middle of one of the petri dishes and killed all the bacteria around it. It's kind of a halo around where it's located, and it's flourishing right there. The petri dish is surrounded by bacteria. Whoa. That means it's a killer. It's able to kill germs, able to kill bacteria, I should say, kill bacteria. Major breakthrough. And of course, it took a lot of many steps. He had to refine it, tested it again, et cetera, et cetera. And he was published in a small magazine. It was kind of ignored for 8 or 9 years. Another professor at a big laboratory discovers it, et cetera, one thing to another, to another, to another. It took 12 years, but finally they were able to produce it in large, large quantities, and it saved hundreds of millions, even billions of lives because of a mistake. So Professor Fleming is the patron saint of slobs everywhere, and we're very, very grateful.
You know, it is always nice when they make you look good, huh?
Yeah. Right. Normally you make a mistake, it makes you look bad, but this is one of those rare exceptions.
Yeah, like, see, I told you. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Well, tell me this on this whole Mondami thing. What was, based on all these blunders and mistakes you've looked at through history, what was your thought on that?
Well, yes, I think it was been said that Mondami is a young man with very old ideas. Socialism has been proven to be a bankrupt idea and has failed over and over again. Coming out of Poland, there was an old kind of a saying, joke. They were saying that in socialism, whether you stand up or whether you sit down, you get paid the same wage. So that's one of the big problems with it. It does not reward people who work 16 hours a day, borrow money from their family, just work their heart out to open up a new restaurant, to open up a new home improvement business, whatever it might be, because if you do make a lot of money, the restaurant, the home improvement business, the government's going to come in and take it all away from you anyway. They don't want anybody making more money than other people.
Right.
So it ruins the incentive to work hard, ruins the incentive to innovate, and everything just flattens out. And that leads to failure after failure after failure. And so one question, if I had the opportunity, I would ask Mayor Mondami, are you concerned that Wall Street is going to lose a large amount of its business to the Texas Stock Exchange, which is opening later next year? He should be very concerned because down in Texas, they have a very pro-business environment. Up in New York, under his leadership, they're going to have a very negative business environment, high taxes. And in Texas, they passed an amendment to the state constitution that there will be no taxes on financial transactions. Up in New York, they have heavy taxes on financial transactions. That, along with the cost of living and many other factors, it's going to be much more profitable to do business in Dallas, Texas, with the what they call on Wall Street, with the new stock exchange that is up in New York. And some people are predicting that the New York Stock Exchange may fail and be replaced by the one down in Dallas and cost people in New York thousands of jobs and billions of dollars in tax revenue, et cetera, et cetera. So he's about to learn a lesson in free enterprise and competition. If you burden your situation, your offering with heavy taxes and heavy regulations and so on, you may find that it fails and you find yourself going out of business.
And dragging everybody else with you.
That's right. Down the drain.
It does. It's interesting. We interviewed another historian not that long ago, and it just blows my mind that this information is available, on what happens with socialism in particular, and yet it seems that there's a really critical lack of knowledge.
Yes, there was a famous debate years ago between Phil Donahue and Milton Friedman, the famous economist, who Nobel Prize winning economist, talking about which is best, socialism or free enterprise. And Milton Friedman was making the point that no economic system has lifted more people out of poverty, created more prosperity than free enterprise. It unleashes very powerful forces which drives the economy forward and creates many businesses and many jobs. You go back to almost every successful company we've had in the United States. You go back to Home Depot, to Hewlett Packard, just pick one out. It goes back to the very beginning. It was one or two or three guys really focusing on an idea, really believing in what they were doing, taking up, working many long hours, borrowing a lot of money, and sometimes for the family, so on and so forth. They're making it work, making it work. At Home Depot, they failed the first time around, came back around successful the second time. All those businesses and all those jobs came from the entrepreneur. And without the entrepreneur, you have almost nothing. Now, the socialism is an easy sale. It's easy to say, vote for us, we're going to send you a federal check. Vote for us, we're going to tax billionaires, and we're going to give you lots of free buses and free payments of free tuition, et cetera, lots of free stuff. The problem is that, after Margaret Thatcher said, the problem is after a while you run out of other people's money.
Mm-hmm.
And it just fails. It just fails and falls apart time and time and time and time again. And that's the lesson they're going to learn up there in New York, especially if they lose all the financial business they have in Wall Street. It moves down to Dallas where it's so much more profitable. And by the way, a house in New York costs five times as much as a house down in Dallas, Texas. So they're going to find that the whole foundation of their financial markets may be in serious trouble in the next 12 months.
Mm. Wow. And that, where is that? I mean, that hasn't been really spoken about all that often.
The people up there in New York, I mean, well, let's try something different. Well, he's promising this. He's promising government grocery stores. He's promising free bus lines. He's promising free daycare, so on, et cetera, like this. Well, okay, that's fine. It's always a big weakness, I guess, to capitalism, because the socialists said we can just promise you this and promise you this, and here comes this federal check. But you look at the record, and over and over and over again, it's just flopped and failed. And cause a great deal of misery.
Yeah, and it's hard for me to understand how so many people, I mean, New York's a big city, how so many people can believe that all that's going to happen when in the past it never comes to fruition. They can promise all they want, but when it comes time to doing it, I mean, I think he's already... I think I heard something the other day about he's trying to get enough money to get the free buses going, but he can't even do that. So it's kind of amazing to me that people are believing that this is all going to happen.
Well, you look at the track record, you make a very good point. You look at Detroit. It's been under Democratic leadership for at least, 20, 30 some odd years. Just a horrible mess. Look at Baltimore, same thing. Democratic leadership under, it's a horrible mess. Look at California. We had the rail at high speed rail, $9 billion, and we had to get the first mile of it operating.
Yeah, we call that high cost rail.
Yes,
make sure you include a chapter of that in your next book, High Cost Rail.
Yeah, I'll make it.
You'd have to do a whole book about the blunders, though. I mean, it's like you couldn't really narrow it down to one thing.
You could call it California Dreaming.
Well, I guess, and they, of course, they can't manage their forests out there. You go, you pull up all the bushes and all the shrubbery, so it doesn't act as a stepping stone for the larger fires, et cetera. You also have water in your reservoirs. You also have.
We want to make sure 50% of our water goes out for fish to the ocean.
Yes, the snail darter.
Yeah. We got to flush it all for fish because fish are. Well, it's kind of funny because now we're having all this problem with wolves, and someone sent me a. We're not the only state who has a problem with wolves, but. Somebody had sent me the California Fish and Game logo had been modified. It says California Department of Fish and Wolves. And underneath it says, because screw everything else. It's like, well, I think we probably ought to adopt that logo. It's probably more accurate than what we've got going.
Well, you look at the Florida, which is a red state and a beautifully managed this state. Whenever they have a hurricane coming, of course they're plagued with hurricanes there. Governor DeSantis has like thousands of utility workers all lined up, standing and waiting. And as soon as the storm moves through, here they come, and they immediately get to work getting all the functioning of the power back in place. I had a bridge that blew down, had it rebuilt in 3 days, just operating A+ efficiency. and serving the people very well, come to California, they're just flubbing all over themselves. I mean, they've got the homeless people out there defecating in the streets. They have drug laws. A lot of people not only dying from drug overdoses, but they're having their lives ruined because they're addicted. People that could be productive citizens, that could be fathers and mothers and holding good jobs, are just out there in the streets living in filth. It shows what happens when there's no discipline and no standards being maintained.
Well, you just keep making, I mean, you know, out here we, and, you know, honestly, the people who are representing California, they're not electing each other. You know, it's the people in the state who continue to, you know, like this Prop 50 that we've been really vocal about the last few months. You know, they've taken 52 members of Congress representing the state, and now it's whittled down to 4 districts that will be represented by Republicans, if in fact that is not repealed. So you look at that, and for a group of people who are supposedly really interested in fairness and, you know, democracy and all that, it's like, well, where does that factor in? So I don't know. It's a kind of a got a little bit of a mental illness thing going on. We have to take a really quick break on that cheerful note.
That's very depressing. Thank you very much.
I did find you a couple of fun songs that fit in, though.
Oh, okay. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. So, you know, we got to kind of see what we can figure out. We'll be right back. Our guest is Jared Knott. He is the author of Tiny Blunders, Big Disasters. And I definitely think you'll enjoy it. 2 books, great read, and the website is fantastic. You can find all that info at
wethepeopleradio.us.
The human race was dying out. No one left to scream and shout. Evil walking on the moon. Smog will get you pretty soon. Everyone was hanging out.
Well, there you go. Ship of fools.
I was hoping you'd have Johnny Horton and Sink of Bismarck, but I guess you couldn't find it.
I didn't have that one already in my thing. I mean, there's 616 choices.
That's a lot.
We're going to put Alex on the Bismarck, though, to close out. He's got time to find that.
If it makes you feel any better, I do have that album.
I guess you can look it up on YouTube. YouTube is available there, too.
That's true. Oh, yeah. We do have the album at home. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
In the basement with the record player. Because we're nerds. So lots of bad choices with socialism, and yet New York felt the need to jump in the deep end.
Going back to what I was saying, I mean, if you were to say, which of the two ideas is easier to sell to people, okay? People who don't have a good historical reference, well, gosh, socialism is great. We're going to tax those billionaires. We're going to take that money, and we're going to pay for all college tuition. We're going to give a free bus line. We're going to give you government-run grocery stores. All these benefits are going to come showering on you. Billionaires, they won't mind. They've got enough money anyway. Well, okay, it's a great sale. And, of course, the affordability is an issue there in New York in particular. And people who don't, the old thing from George Santayana, those who fail to learn the lesson of history are doomed to repeat it. Never more obvious an example than this. We've got people that were not well-educated about free enterprise back in high school and college with liberal professors and liberal teachers. Now we've got a bunch of sheep there that can be easily sheared. and taken advantage of. And again, I believe we're going on just to the basics. How important are the financial markets there in New York City? Well, they employ thousands of people, billions of dollars in taxes, billions of dollars in revenue coming into the city. You're in danger of losing most or all of that entire enterprise down to Texas. That's a very pro-business environment, and you're a very anti-business environment. You're about to pay a terrible price if you keep going down that road.
Yeah, I think you said it well. A lot of these people that are falling for this are people that haven't really taken advantage of free enterprise for whatever reason. No education, lack of motivation. You know, I don't know what it is, but you know, I think they look at it like, "Hey, I don't have anything now. It can't be any worse." Well, it certainly can be worse. It can be a lot worse.
Could you imagine free government grocery stores?
Yeah.
It kind of reminds me of way back when they first came out with. Remember when they first came out with generic and like cereal? It was just a white box with black writing that said cereal on it. So I picture the stores in New York, all the boxes are white with just black writing. Cereal.
Also, I think they had one, in St. Louis, Missouri, they had a government-run grocery store, and it was out of stock and everything, and it just flopped. Just to stank the place up was such a failure. It just doesn't work. You have to, the profit motive is so important on getting people out of bed in the morning, having to work long hours and being very motivated to perform well in their job. To avoid the consequences of failure, that's just the way things work. But again, you look at the record. Look at Detroit, disaster. Look at Baltimore, disaster. Look at California in so many ways. Still a lot of good things, but an awful lot of bad things that come from Los Angeles cities that are poorly run by blue governments. It's just you look at the people leaving California, leaving New Jersey, leaving Illinois, leaving. Yeah, of course, New York and the northern or eastern states, and moving down to Tennessee and to North Carolina, South Carolina, to Texas in particular, and also, of course, Florida and to some extent Georgia. They're leaving the failing states and moving to the prosperous states that emphasize free enterprise and, by the way, law enforcement. One is succeeding and the other is failing.
Yeah, and it seems, you know, why is it so obvious to some and not to others?
I think a good example, too, years ago I used to sell retail into a lot of these little mini-marts and stuff, and I was having a conversation with the owner of one of these stores one day, and it was some holiday coming up, and I said, well, what are you doing for the holiday? He goes, I'm working. I go, you didn't take a day off. He goes, no. He goes, we don't take days off. He goes, this is why America, so many people in America don't have anything, is they're not willing to work. He goes, you can make all the money you ever wanted in America. He goes, you just have to work. And if you work, you'll make money. And when you make money, you can maybe buy another store. And then maybe that store will make more money and so on and so forth. But he said, the problem is Americans have gotten lazy. They take things for free, and they don't want to put in the hours it takes to be successful. And I thought, wow, here's a guy that came here from another country and has it figured out, and he's doing quite well. You know, everybody has that same opportunity, but you have to apply yourself. And I think that's where a lot of people are kind of missing the boat, is they depend too much on free stuff and how to get things without really working for it, which means when you do get it, you don't appreciate it. And so I mean, that I never forgot that. I thought, wow, it's true. I mean, a lot of these people you see out there don't want to work.
Yes, it's sort of like socialism appeals to the darker angels, or lazy angels of our nature. We're going to give you a paycheck, we're going to give you security, we're going to give you these things, you don't have to do much of anything, just vote Democratic, and we'll give it to them, you don't have to earn it. Well, that's a corruption, that nothing corrupts so much as being given the fruits of success without achievement.
Right.
And that's what the socialism does, appealing to the kind of laziness in the nature of a lot of people, and which is too bad.
If it
hurts not to work hard, then you start working hard. If it doesn't hurt because the government came in to save you, then that's, again, a very corrupt system.
Yep.
Yeah, the idea that that we tell people that if you have to work hard, that's abuse. You have five kids. I bet you're a terrible abuser. I know my dad was, and I know Bill's dad was. There was a lot of shoveling and raking and...
Well, there's no free ride. I mean, if socialism worked, every country on the planet would be a socialist planet.
Well, Cuba would be driving
newer
cars, right?
That's right. I mean, everybody would be happy in those countries and be, you know, fully supported and happy and be able to do what they want and travel where they want. But there's no place like that.
Yes, it's funny. You compare 15, 20 years ago, the entire European economy was about the same size as the American economy. And we're not perfect over here, but we allow innovation and encourage innovation. If you were successful in your business, we didn't come in and try to take all the money away and taxes. Well, the top seven, I think, computer high-tech companies, their total worth is about now equal to all of Europe. Europe has fallen way behind. They don't have any of the kind of NVIDIAs or the kind of Broadcoms and so on that the United States has. They've regulated themselves into being a very non-competitive situation. Of course, China's competitive with us, and to some extent, well, maybe Russia to some extent. But the Europeans have become very non-competitive because they have a kind of a socialistic system that rewards complacency and not intense hard work.
Right.
it's amazing that you could even sell a thing like that, you know, ever. And socialism typically comes at the, you know, at the barrel of a gun, with the barrel of a gun. You know, it's usually something everybody agrees to.
And it's been around forever, and it's got a terrible track record. And I don't understand why people don't know that.
Well, yeah, they say everything that we do in life, eating a ham sandwich, to go to the grocery store, or watch a football game, everything you do in life is done for one of two reasons, either to avoid pain or to seek pleasure. And of the two of those, avoiding pain is the more powerful motivation. You can ask any drill sergeant. You'll do a lot more to avoid pain, a lot more to keep from making an F than you will to go from a B to an A. Do a lot more to keep from getting fired than you would to getting promoted. Pain is a powerful motivator. And, of course, the Democratic Party comes in, socialists come in and say, listen, you don't all you have to do is vote for us. We'll take care of this for you. We're going to tax those billionaires. We're going to get that money. Here's all this nice, soft, cushy benefits that we're going to give to you. And so vote for us. So it's a very easy thing to sell on the surface. The problem is it just doesn't work. In fact, it causes huge, huge pain down the road. And I think New York is going to learn what Baltimore and Detroit and parts of California have already learned. Hopefully they won't be too late before they can turn it around.
What's your, I hate to make you have a prediction, but how long do you think it'll take New York to figure this out, that it's going to be a total disaster?
I don't know if it's going to happen in 2 years, but within 4 years, and again, especially, and a lot of people are predicting, they're saying that Dallas stock market is going to take over all of what's currently taking place in Wall Street and New York. If they lose Wall Street, they lose 70-80% of the business that's in Wall Street, and jobs are lost.
Oh, yeah, they're
lost.
Doomed.
That's going to be a huge, embarrassing disaster. And it's going to say, well, see, we tried to tell you, and you wouldn't listen.
When is that slated to take effect?
Goldman Sachs is, I think it's an 800,000 square foot building they have put down there. They have most of their employees are now already in Dallas. I think Oppenheimer and J.P. Morgan have already moved down there. The Texas stock market is going to open sometime next year. I'm not sure when, but it will open up. And there will be no good reason to stay in New York City when you can move to Dallas. And, again, the taxes are a fraction.
Yeah, and you can do well.
The cost of housing is a fraction. Yes, and so it may kick the stuffing out of New York in short order. We'll see.
Bummer. Jared, we have run out of time.
Okay.
We don't want to have a tiny blunder or a big disaster on this. But we did find Joni Horton for you.
Oh.
So we're going to go out on top, huh?
Great. That's a great question. Tinyblundersbigdisasters.com is a fun place.
Yes,
I'm looking forward to this song.
All right. Thanks very much. You're listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
In May of 1941, the war had just begun. The Germans had the biggest ship that had the biggest guns. The Bismarck was the fastest ship that never sailed the sea. On her decks were guns as big as steers and shells as big as trees. Out of the cold and foggy night came the British ship, the Hood. And every British seaman, he knew and understood. They had to sink the Bismarck, the terror of the sea. Stop those guns as big as steers and those shells as big as trees. We find that German battleship is making such a fuss. We gotta sink the Bismarck, cause the world depends on us.
Hit the decks, a running boys, and spin those guns around.
When we find the Bismarck, we gotta cut her down.